Hi, welcome to the Cosa Nostra. I'm Eddie.
I'm Noah.
And we are covering 1986. Well, covering. We're talking about 1986's Stand By Me, directed by Rob Reiner, starring a very young River Phoenix. Went through a dark road there.
We will get into that.
And based on The Body by Stephen King, a short story in the same book collection, in a book collection called Four Seasons, famously put together with The Shawshank Redemption. So quite a movie book there. I think...
Okay, when was the first time you saw this movie?
This weekend.
Yeah. The first time I saw it was in... Wait, the first time you ever saw it was this weekend. Well, the first time I saw it was in the day of the year of our Lord, 2025. I saw it yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Well, we're both fresh. It's been quite
fresh
a ride.
In memory. But it's not like I didn't know what Stand By Me was.
Oh,
like,
I knew. I'd seen so many Instagram edits.
It's just like in TV shows, you always see parodies. Like the Simpsons did a parody called The Blunder Years, where like Homer gets traumatized by seeing the dead body of Mr. Smithers' dad. And that's like, you always see these TV shows parody and stuff like that. So you always know what, everybody, even if you haven't seen the movie, you know what Stand By Me is.
Yeah.
You know, you always have a good enough idea of it because it's the main idea of it is really popular. You know, everybody has a good enough idea, you know.
So Stand By Me, I think it's a really, really strong 60s, like, timepiece. Like, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
It feels very naturally that time period.
Yeah, you get the idea that the people who are making it are fond for this time.
Yeah, it feels like Stranger Things set in the 50s.
Yeah, I know, because you don't see 50s nostalgia because it's become more obvious that not everybody's life in the 50s was all hunky-dory. But, like, it is cool to see. It reminds me of a movie that came out the year before, Back to the Future, which was also doing 50s-inspired
thing. And Grease.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's an interesting time period to always go back to. And, like, the references that they put there, like, I have enough of an idea of the 50s to understand, you know, what the $64,000, you know, question show was and, you know, like who all these people were. So I think it is an interesting time capsule that we just don't see that often. And I think this movie, I haven't seen anybody say it, but I feel it's a landmark in terms of, like, not teen,
but coming of age.
Because you don't really see this in the past, apart from John Hughes movies.
Even so,
I don't think I really saw this kind of showing a more realistic portrayal of what young kids were like.
Yeah, I think it's really honest. Like,
it's a very honest movie.
It doesn't try and be more than it is. I think it's the kind of movie that not everyone's going to love. So when I was in year seven, my English teacher made us read a book at the beginning of every lesson. We did a book called The Outsiders. And I can feel, obviously, it's mainly based on Stephen King's story. But when you look at characters like Ace and Eyeball and the, like, little gang, you can feel the influence that Outsiders had on it.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have read Outsiders, but it's a book about a 1950s gang. It's a bit Good Will Hunting-ish in vibe, but you feel that kind of style of kind of kids. We watched it at the perfect time. You know what I mean? Like, where it's enough to feel nostalgic for me, like, with the kind of friend group, you know, being like the five people that you spend all your time with. That being said,
with this, I just want to say, with this movie, I did not find out until like 20 minutes ago that the voice, the narration, and the person at the end who plays Gordy was Richard Dreyfuss. And it's so weird because the day before I had seen Jaws and Richard Dreyfuss is right there. And it's like, I'm watching this and I'm like, I know I've heard this voice somewhere. So, you know, it turns out it's Richard Dreyfuss, which is, you know, that's quite cool. And you've got, Will Wheaton as Gordy. I don't know what he's done. I'm not familiar with Star Trek, so sorry. He's in
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, there we go.
Flubber.
That classic movie.
That happened.
You got Corey Feldman. I'm a little familiar with Corey Feldman. You know, he's most famous probably for The Goonies at this point.
Oh, it's this guy.
So, and I knew him from Joe Dante's 1989 movie, The Bubs. That's where I've known him most. And I swear he's in Gremlins. Yes, he's in Gremlins as well.
He's in Gremlins. Yes. License to Drive.
So he's, he was one of those big child stars of the 1980s. And I can't get into it now. But there's been so much stuff. But just like, there's been a lot of issues with his life and like what actually happened. You know what it's like for a child star. It's
yeah, obviously.
Crazy. So the stuff with him and Michael Jackson and his friend Corey Haim, who died in 2010, I think from drug overdose or something. So there's a lot there. There's River Phoenix in this movie. Have you seen any River Phoenix movies
before? No. This was my first introduction.
Yeah, I had seen him.
For a child actor.
I know. He's really good.
Oh my God.
And I didn't know that much about it. Like, all I'd seen him in was he played young Indy in Indiana.
Oh, I've seen that, to be fair.
So, yeah, that's my most familiar with him. But he looks kind of different in this movie, so it was a bit hard. And, like,
he was incredible.
So good. Because a problem I have with a lot of child actors, they can be really stiff.
Yeah, they can be stiff. And then when they are talented, it kind of just snaps out of nowhere.
I know. And it's just, there's only few child actors that I actually feel, okay, that was actually a really good performance.
That was very good from him. I think he had...
I can't name any off the top of my head. But
he had the amazing kind of like wise beyond his years vibe, yeah, that he's kind of like, he knows like who he is.
I know.
But yeah, he knows that he won't have like a chance. And it made me feel like very, like I was really happy when we heard that he was like a lawyer and stuff. And then it made it like...
Yeah, but it's never... I do think it is probably a good idea that they, at the beginning, they set up, okay, he's died. I don't know why that
sits
well with me.
The thing with the brother was so...
Sometimes I take issue in movies that, like, they have flashbacks, like, every, like, 10 minutes. But here, like, I like how they spread it across. And, you know, it really makes me, like, feel for this character instead of just shoving it all at the beginning. And, you know, we get to know him more and stuff. It's, the movie never becomes depressing. Because it's, you know...
But I like that so we see
we have to get into...
Ace?
I should probably find his actual name because I probably can't say this word on the show.
I think... I'll cover up while you do that. I think it was quite cool to see Will Wheaton's character have these, like, backstory flashbacks. And then these equally interesting characters in River Phoenix and... Yeah. Teddy Duchamp,
yeah,
who both like kind of struggle as much, know their backstory.
And okay, we need to talk about Davey Hogan, better known as, take this out if you don't want it, Lard Ass. I'm sorry, the whole Lard Ass scene.
That was sick.
I'm sorry. Like, I am cursed for liking movies like Ace Ventura, Happy Gilmore, and, like, Problem Child. So I'm not sure if this is immature, but I found it the funniest thing in the world.
Oh, it was really funny.
It's so immature. It's just the kind of story only a child could ever make up. Like, how everybody in the crowd starts puking purple stuff, although they haven't even eaten the pie. It's like how I love how obvious it's just the bodysuit that this kid is wearing. And it's so messed up how everybody, even the mayor, calls him, the guy at the context literally calls him Lardas. And it's so messed up. And it's so politically incorrect. And I know it can never be made today. But I'm sorry, I am just awful. You don't see that kind of stuff nowadays. Where like
also, it's really like funny. Surprisingly, yeah, like when there's just this random like spot of narration often not existing, he's like, my friends had all left, and it's like, sick him, and he's like, now what he said was sick him, what I heard was sick him balls. It's like, that's so
and
funny.
I love the kids also say sick balls.
Sick balls, sick balls, run.
It is very funny,
and then it leads that up with really deep moments, like when we learn that Teddy's dad's in an asylum, or that like nobody, but I love that River Phoenix is like, nobody even asked if I actually took the money. And he's like, well, did you? Well, obviously I took it, yeah. But like,
you know, I think it's really paced very well. Do you know that much about the director, Rob Reiner?
No.
He was really one of those directors who directed a lot of those famous 80s
movies. Oh, whoa.
Movies, you know?
This is Spinal
Princess
Tap.
Bride, Stand By Me.
A Few Good Men.
A Few Good Men.
Misery. So a bit of a Stephen King
fan.
Yeah,
so Misery is a movie I need to see.
Flipped.
Have you seen Misery, by the way?
No.
I think I was seeing a bit of it. I was seeing a bit of it yesterday, and it's so cool.
Did he? No. And then he did The Bucket List.
The Bucket. So he's a Jack Nicholson film.
The Bucket List was not great.
Is it not? It looks fine. He did When Harry Met Sally, so he was already in
Flipped
good
is books. Supposed to be quite good. Similar vibe.
The Prince of Rice, that semi-made. So he was... did he do Throw Mama Off a Train? Yeah, he did as well. So yeah, he was really one of those. He directed a lot of the most famous 80s movies. Sleepless in Seattle.
LeBron James.
He acted in Sleepless in Seattle, and he was also in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
As well. And... Yes.
Being Charlie.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's a very good director.
Parks reference? Parks Being Wolf Lodge?
I doubt it. I really doubt it.
It looks a bit like Charlie.
Yeah, I know it does, but I really doubt it. Is it?
Oh, so it's like quite a lot. Interesting. So anyway, back to Stand By Me.
Can we get into River Phoenix or like...
I feel like we should wrap up on the film before we go down that little...
Yeah, like, okay, fine. Anything else you want to say?
Performances, very good.
I know.
There were a few things I didn't understand, but I found quite interesting. Like, this deer thing where he felt the need to specify that's the only thing he didn't tell them.
Yeah, I was thinking that was going to pay off later, but it never comes back.
And the leeches, that was very well done.
I just cannot watch that scene.
That was perfectly made to make young boys and even like my dad like scared.
Imagine filming that scene.
Like leeches on your balls is the scariest thing I could think of. Especially because they probably didn't know what leeches were. They just knew that they were like on them.
Yeah, actually. But,
and he like passes out so like dramatically.
Yeah, so, you might enjoy this. I'm Jerry O'Connell.
The way he goes, oh, geez, oh, geez.
The Jerry O'Connell is also in Jerry Maguire, and he plays Frank Cushman. I haven't seen Jerry.
Jerry Maguire's great. Yes. We may have to do that.
So I don't know.
Show me the money. Show me the money. Oh.
So, like, I don't know who.
That's such a well-written scene. The phone call scene where he's, like, screaming at the top of his lungs. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, so apparently he's, like, one of the main characters in that, so you probably wouldn't.
Frank who?
Frank Cushman, you'd probably find out.
Oh, I do know Frank Cushman.
And until now, I did not know John Cusack was in this movie, but here we are.
Yes.
Yeah, apparently. I don't know who he plays. Mr.
Okay, Denny LaChance, he plays
Denny LaChance,
the dad.
There we go. Okay.
I think originally that the whole thing with Ace and like his gang was a bit useless. But like looking back at it, it's quite interesting because it shows like the two different kinds of friends that you have.
I know.
And where like, I can't remember his name, Chom, River Phoenix's character, what's his name?
Gordy, I'm sorry. Chris Chambers.
Chris Chambers, like where he's going to end up if he doesn't like succeed in
but
life.
But it is, it really adds to the time period, you know.
Also the body's like really horrifically like accurate. It's not like he's all like, grotesquely mangled and like stuff. It's just like
kind of grey and
just a body.
Yeah,
kind of just
somebody
there.
Who clearly just fell down.
And Keds, they talk about Keds shoes, which are like aggressively 50s.
I know. Then they talk about Pez, and then
the Pez line is.
They discuss one of the most important questions I've ever heard of.
What the hell is it?
What Mickey's a mouse, Donald's a duck. What's a Goofy?
Goofy's a cow.
What the hell is a Goofy?
Goofy's a cow.
Goofy's not a cow. Look at his ears. He's a dog. I can't prove it. He's a dog. Because Pluto's a dog. I don't know what a Goofy is.
He's a dog. Okay. So Goofy, the Disney character, is a tall anthropomorphic dog who is a close friend of Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck.
Why is Pluto just a normal dog? Why is Goofy different?
Some fans believe Goofy is a cow, specifically an Aberdeen Angus, due to his relationship with Clara Belle the cow.
Some people have gone really into this. Fair enough.
But to be fair, I think the rule was, I saw somewhere in Disney, but there's some dogs can walk, some dogs don't. And that's based on whether they wear clothes or not. So if they wear clothes, they can talk and are like humans. And if they don't wear clothes, they're just like a dumb animal.
But it's... Oh my God. I'm probably thinking too hard about this. It's so confusing. The minutes are confusing. But that is such a true question. Then they also talk about the Mickey Mouse Club, which was you know, really big at the time, you know, been on for like 5 years at that point. So it is, it really does feel, you know, of its time as well. So that's really good. So when this movie came out, it had a budget of 7.5 million, which I don't know how much that is today. Probably about 30 million, if I'm being honest.
Yeah,
and it made 52 million. So big success. I don't know what 1986 was looked like in terms of movies.
I think it had a couple of things.
Let me look.
I mean, it's a soundtrack as well. Yeah, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Ferris Bueller's Day Off is amazing.
Yeah.
It's like so like great because it's like, it's disguised. It's kind of like Stand By Me.
Yeah, I was talking about like how that.
And is, like, it's disguised like a kids movie.
Yeah.
But it's got like really deep meaning.
I feel that's more with the movie that came out the year before, The Breakfast Club, where it has just like this really deep meaning. This and Stand By Me, I think, are the forerunners and the people who really started that coming of age, you know, actually looking what is it like to be like a teenager or like a young teenager.
I think the last one I saw that was really like that, where it was like, what is it like? It's a kid's movie, but it has a meaning for adults behind it, was Surf's Up.
You think?
Is that The Penguins?
The Penguins.
I have not seen that movie.
Hear me out. It's a movie about penguins surfing, but it has the importance of keeping your own, like keeping your ambitions and not letting them, not giving up, but like the importance of just kind of letting, going with the flow and just being like life.
I feel the Meet the Robinsons.
Meet the Robinsons.
That's how I feel.
I mean, otherwise this year was, Top Gun.
Top Gun for this year. You had Ruthless People, never seen it. Aliens, have not seen it. The Rodney Dangerfield movie, Back to School, Star Trek 4, Karate Kid 2,
Top Gun,
Crocodile Dundee, and Top Gun. Pink. Top Gun was the top movie of that year.
And what?
Spike Lee movie?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
She's got to have it.
You know, Great Mouse Detective. Banger.
Very good. Oh, I thought that was going to... Okay, the hockey mask made me think it was going to be like Mighty Ducks 5 or something.
Not the Mighty Ducks. I'm waiting for my Mighty Ducks horror movie though.
Mighty Ducks is terrible.
It's not. It's
Do you
not
understand
that
how
bad.
Impractical? Flying V makes no sense.
It's not that bad.
It doesn't make sense. You'd get like called out instantly for fouling people.
I mean, it's innocent. It's
and the Oreo joke.
I don't know what to do with that. Yeah,
that's not cool.
You got Little Shop of Horrors, which is perfect. The Fly, which I'm not even gonna be in a 10-meter radius to. I don't
Yeah,
that's
scary. Yeah. So 1986. And this got a best adapted screenplay.
Fair enough.
Which is quite surprising. All things considered, I didn't...
It's pretty well written.
No, but like knowing the Academy, I'm genuinely surprised they went
for it. That scene where he has the gun and he's like, you're going to shoot all of us? He's like, no, just use it. I was scared. Yeah, I saw the killer in his eye.
Yeah, I was watching that volume and I was like, I'm scared because it's going to... The gunshot, I feel
like... I was like, don't do that.
I know.
I thought he was going to say, like, when they're like, you're not going to take the body back. I thought he was going to say, like, we're going to take two of them back. And then, like, Chris, River Phoenix's character, was going to take out the gun and shoot Ace. I was like, don't do that. You're throwing your life away. But then it turned out that, like, Gordy had it. And he's like, well, Gordy, scary guy. Also, Gordy's brother. He seems like such a legend. Apart from the fact he supports the Yankees. But like, I think he's quite like, I like the inclusion of his brother. I think that was important because it kind of showed like who Gordy was and where he comes from. I think that's really important. I don't like when characters are like all tortured, but you don't like understand why.
That was my issue with Little Miss Sunshine.
You don't really, well, I love Little Miss
Sunshine. I'm not going to keep beating up for this movie because I've talked way so much about this movie.
He hates it so much.
You'd actually think I've got so little to say about it, but for some reason I've talked so much about it.
We're nowhere near it, and you're already like you're dissing it from like Longshot.
So do you want to talk about what happened to River Phoenix? Because that is...
Go ahead. Talk about River Phoenix.
Okay.
Also, can I just say this was very impressive from Stephen King because this is very off-brand for him.
This and The Shawshank Redemption. Indeed.
Yes. Right. On topic.
River Phoenix. Fun fact, his older brother was Joaquin Phoenix.
Not surprised there.
Yes. Yeah.
I can imagine that acting moms in the family.
So he, like there was like four of them, you know. And so he was in like early movies like Explorers, the Joe Dante movie Explorers, which Ethan Hawke actually auditioned for this movie. Ethan Hawke is in Explorers with River Phoenix, and Ethan Hawke auditioned for Stand By Me, but didn't get it. But he got Dead Poets Society like 2 years later, so we're all good.
And let's just say, Hulk and Phoenix has had quite the life.
Yes, I haven't.
Because he's the only Phoenix brother still alive. Or
let me check.
Or one of two.
Okay, no, they're all good. Apart from River. And he's in Stand By Me, and then he was in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade in 1989. And he got the Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor for The Mosquito Coast, which also has Harrison Ford in it. And he was really going to look like he was going to be the next big guy. He was going to be the Leonardo DiCaprio of the 90s. And then this is so depressing. He died at age 23. I remember when I saw that, 23. From combined drug intoxication in West Hollywood in the early hours of Halloween 1993, having overdosed on cocaine and heroin in a place called the Viper Room. Now, the Viper Room is like this nightclub in Hollywood. Let that be a cautionary tale to all people who want to become actors. Just definitely be careful.
Sad.
It's very.
He did a lot of good movies. He did, is it My Private or My Personal Idaho?
My own Private.
Very famous. Mm.
Yes.
He was fantastic, but
I know that opening entirely is just perfect. Is there anything else about this movie? So like
the score, the music, is great.
I was looking the railway. I don't know. It looked the railway. Apparently, it's closed or something. They closed in 1992.
That inspired Stranger Things famously.
Oh yeah, I'm not surprised. I think the railway actually closed in 1992. To the McLeod Railway.
It looks cool as hell.
Like look at the bridge, and I think it looks so cool. I would never step on it, but I think it just looks
really
cool. That
was the fat one. Can I just say half the reasons they almost died is because of the fat one.
Yeah, I wasn't. What's his name? Varun. I think.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
Also, 1986, eventful year.
Not really.
Space shuttle explosion of the space shuttle Challenger. Chernobyl nuclear disaster, FIFA World Cup, first federal holiday for Martin Luther King Jr., first group inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fames, the beginning of the first global effort to combat AIDS, and then that's really not important, apart from the British financial markets crashing or going up incredibly, big bang.
Yeah, so apparently Norman Lear, the person who made like all those series in the 70s, like All in the Family Matters, he gave $7.5 million of his own money to make this. So the one guy financed this entire movie.
That's crazy.
You know, I just found out today that he lived to 101 and died in 2023. So
The Body was the original name of the movie based on
that.
The
is album. So cool that they have like that, and that was the original name for it, and they've still got like the t-shirts and stuff. It shows you how much a movie can change over its production.
Can I just say, Stephen King, like, wow, okay. What man?
I've got it here. The reason why they changed the title. So in March 1986, Columbia Pictures concerned that the original title of The Body was misleading, renamed the film Stand By Me. So according to the screenwriter Reynold Gideon, The Body sounded like a sex film, a bodybuilding film, or another Stephen King horror film. Rob came up with Stand By Me and intended it to be, and it ended up being the least unpopular option. So there we go. I get it, because you even said, like, hearing The Body, it's like, oh, Stephen King, another horror movie thing, you know, this is going to be another Misery, it's going to be another Shining. You know, I completely understand why they would change it. Fair enough. You know, fair enough. So Ethan Hawke, he auditioned for Chris Chambers.
Chambers. I think Chambers is one of those characters that's just so well written.
He was very well written.
Slightly insane.
I know.
Although, fun little fact, Stephen King, obviously a large part of this is to do with the railway. Stephen King, when he was a child, apparently, it's a bit myth, but his mother said that one day he went to go play with his friends. He came home crying, saying that his friend had died on the railway. Very next day, he woke up, didn't remember a word of it.
Wow. Weird.
So
very weird.
Maybe subconsciously, it's about his childhood.
Definitely. Like, everything with Gordy, like, yeah, this, I haven't read the original book, so I'm not sure how much this is in the original book, but I definitely feel all the stuff with wanting to be a writer and all that. Like, it has to have come from Stephen King himself. There is no other explanation for that,
I mean, he's quite a weird guy, but in the world of film, he's actually done quite a few things to, like, help. So he
directed Maximum Overdrive. Dark time.
But
Oh my God. Yeah, so, you know, he took a shot at being a director and,
But he did this project with film students where they could buy the rights to some of his books for a dollar. He called them his dollar babies.
Mm.
So he did that. He is a bit of an odd guy. He said when he wrote Cujo, he was so high most of the time, he doesn't remember writing any of it apart from cleaning up the nosebleeds.
No, he made Carrie? Oh my God, this guy is something else. The Mist. The Green Mile?
Yeah, so of the films that he made, that he has something to do with.
Yeah, like, he's only done Maximum Overdrive.
Pet Sematary.
Thank God he only has.
The Shining. He helped with the X-Files. He
was in The Simpsons, really?
He was briefly. I mean, like, he did a lot of... Yeah, so the Dollar Baby program closed last year, December 31st.
Why?
I want
his book. I want a book. Mm-hmm. He's got enough to go around, clearly.
Lou, you can buy the... So, he's written an insane amount of books.
How? Short stories or books?
Overall, I think he's written over 60 books.
Okay, how many... Because it says he wrote...
Because back in the 80s, he was churning them out. He was
churning them out like it's nobody's business. Like, jeez. And I think there's always been this kind of thing where, like, he's had an iffy relationship with his films. I don't think he was a fan of The Shining.
No. This film, actually.
He said he was impressed. Rob Reiner
showed him. He was visibly shaking. Left the cinema. Came back and told Rob Reiner that is the best adaptation of work that he's ever seen. Of his own work.
Do we know about, like, what he thought of, like, Misery or, like, The Green Mile?
Yeah, I don't think he liked any of them.
Yeah.
I think he liked The Shining. I think he liked that. He liked, okay. Yeah, because Kubrick cut 80% of the book. He made it really simple. In the book, there's a whole subplot about the ghosts and, like, all the things that happened there. Like, a president got shot, a lady got drowned, like, loads of things happen I've read the book. Loads of people die in the book. But then he just kind of, like...
condensed it just to be that the family and the ghost played by what's his face.
Yeah. I think the only thing that he likes the new It movies, I think he was a fan of.
Really?
Yeah. The first one.
Have you seen the one with Tim Curry in the 80s?
I don't think he liked that one.
Yeah.
The Mist, if you have read it.
They
did make
a movie. I could be wrong, but they might have made a movie out of The Mist.
They made a movie and they recently made a TV show.
Okay.
Which I don't think is particularly good.
Yeah. Oh, no, you've seen it.
And Running Man, which is being remade with Glenn Powell and Edgar Wright directing.
Oh, that's cool. So, yeah, like Stand By Me, quite a big critical success as well. It sits in the hearts of many, like, 80s kids. I get the gist. And, you know, it's been parodied a bunch of times. Well, it's been inspired for movies like Boys in the Hood, I'm reading here. A movie called Kings of Summer is viewed as being inspired by Stand By Me. Television series like Seinfeld, Rick and Morty, The Simpsons, Family Guy, they all did their parodies of, like, Stand By Me. So it's, even if you haven't seen it like me, you still always know what this is. Because it's such a famous story, you know. It doesn't really leave you, this thing, you know. And I would hope that most people don't act like me and wait this long to see the movie. You know, you should probably, you know, just see it, you know.
It's very much worth
it. It's like The Simpsons and The Shining parody they did, you know. Is that one's good, but, like, you should probably see the original as well.
It's a very, very good movie. I'm going to give it 5.
Okay, I'm giving it 4. So we
4.5. We'll average out.
Go for the middle, man.
Yeah, definitely worth a watch.
This has been like the least controversial.
Yeah.
Least controversial movie done. Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
I
still entirely on brand for us. It's an indie movie.
Is it? No, it's the it was released by Columbia Pictures.
But it has the vibe.
It's got the vibe, but would I call like The Breakfast Club an indie movie just because its budget was like 1 million? Was it actually? I'm wrong. Sorry.
Oh, The Life of Chuck is a Stephen. Oh, okay. Yeah. So 4 or 5.
Yeah.
We definitely recommend this.
Yeah.
4.5 stars from us. A must watch.
Then go watch other Stephen King movies. Go read other Stephen King books. Apart from Maximum Overdrive.
I've been Eddie.
I've been Noah.
Thank you for listening.